Hi folks, welcome back to On Call with Insignia, where we go on call with leaders innovating the future of Southeast Asia's internet and digital economy, or as we like to call it, ASEANovation. So back in March, we set up our first Clubhouse session with founder CEOs from three of our portfolio companies that experienced a huge boost in growth over 2020, and talked to them about how they plan on sustaining that growth this year. We got a lot of great insights, and we're happy to be sharing with them with you. And we're happy to be sharing them with you on this episode. So we have with us on this Clubhouse session Giacomo Ficari, CEO of LifePal, Indonesia's leading online insurance marketplace; Theodoric Chu, CEO of Intellect, Singapore-based mental health technology company that recently launched an app that hit 1 million downloads in its first 6 months; and Huy Nghiêm, CEO of FinHay, Vietnam's leading wealth management platform. They've all been on our show in separate episodes, and today we'll be hearing from all three of them. So before we go on call, don't forget to follow our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to podcasts. And you can follow us for daily content for founders and investors on Twitter at InsigniaVC and Instagram at Insignia_VC. Now let's head into the call. Hi Giacomo, Theo, and Huy, thanks for being with us on this Clubhouse session. So I'd like to start with asking you, since you guys come from different industries and come from different markets, one of the commonalities that you guys have is that you have had a very remarkable year of growth over 2020, right? And so one of the things I think many of us are curious about is, apart from the pandemic as a direct factor in your growth, what are the other factors you would say when it comes to your specific market or a specific industry that influence the kind of growth that you experienced over the past year? Giacomo, let's start with you.
Clarity is something that took us a few months. But once we got it, we saw that we were actually helping better the customer and converting. So the business was really getting there. And that's, I think, something really important. Like, it's too expensive and complicated to focus on the wrong customer audience and educating some people really for the big group. The second driver was for us to understand how to convert. And we realized that in markets like Indonesia, they're really massive. It's a little bit easier to get top of the funnel metric. It could be traffic, active users, they're not paying. But it's much harder to convert them and to monetize them. So for us, understanding that conversion was actually been kind of like a fulcrum of last year. And it's something that also we bring as a legacy in 2021 with a good impact on the business.
Yeah, I'd say it was probably great timing for you guys, just at the same time that you guys were discovering sort of new things about your customers and how you could properly engage with them. How about you, Theo? What are the factors that sort of influence your growth over 2020? I mean, you achieved 1 million downloads in the first 6 months since you guys launched. And, you know, what are those factors that helped propel this growth apart from the pandemic itself?
Yeah, so I think the first thing for sure, and we won't go too deep into this, but I think there's been clear tailwinds in the mental health space around the world, where it's a big issue that COVID really shined this big spotlight on the issue that mental health needs to be solved for. But one thing that actually, when we started this, we believed was that it was a thing that's going to happen sooner or later. COVID quite strongly accelerated the pace of how people adopt mental health by a good few years. In Asia, I kind of think of like 3 to 5 years acceleration. But one thing for sure is that it was sort of people call it like the unspoken pandemic, or pandemic that's out there. It's the mental health pandemic, which is years in the making, where one of the biggest issues across Asia is that the taboo in place where people struggle, high-functioning cities like Seoul, Tokyo, Singapore, Hong Kong, people really have high-pressure jobs, but nowhere really they turn to solve for this issue. There's this problem. So that's the first piece. The next piece is really similar to what Giacomo mentioned earlier, really understanding how to reach to the audience in Asia. Unlike in the US and in the West, where a lot of people are much more open towards the concept of mental well-being, in Asia, it's something that people don't really want to address and talk about. And people instinctively think about things like schizophrenia, suicidal thoughts, panic attacks, and these are things that are important to solve for, but not what most people can relate to. So one story I'd like to share, that before we actually started or built anything at Intellect back in our early days, mid of 2019, and we spent quite a number of months really validating the issue. My background being in growth marketing, we did a lot of experiments, different landing pages, different messaging, different pain points that we're trying to solve for. And basically one thing that cut through is that people struggled, but they didn't want to acknowledge it as a mental health issue. They kind of broke it down to daily issues. And that's kind of how we went about it, solving from the core issue of the user firstly. And the last piece, very briefly, it's that we always built from day one, right? Even though we're serving enterprise clients today, big companies, individuals as well, we built in mind to actually solve for the end user, making sure that people actually love the experience. We're not in the space of where Netflix, Spotify, or games are. So a key thing is actually really to engineer experience that people actually are delighted to use it, so that it can be used as more of a sticky, everyday tool for them as well.
Yeah, thanks, Theo. Again, another case of doing these experiments at the right time. And Hui, for you, what was your experience in Vietnam and with wealth management over last year?
I think apart from the two stories, I think we do see the similarities at FinHai and apart from the COVID pandemic. So at FinHai, during the late 2019 and early 2020, we started to see the insights of the clients in Vietnam. And that was a point in time that we tried to look at different products to offer to our clients. And during March and April, that was the time that we offered a new product called a saving product. And then it just hit the market straight away. In the first 2 weeks, we saw attraction. And I think that was the time that we found the product market fit for FinHai. Initially, we offered the micro investment into mutual funds. But then the Vietnamese love saving. And then we offered the saving product. And that was the treasure. It helped to increase the traction base and also the number of users. So yeah, product market fit. And then understanding our clients. So even though we started in 2017, but we always looked at investing in mutual funds. But turns out, you know, people love saving. And then when we actually offer that particular product, it actually helped drive business. I would say, apart from pandemic, I would say right timing would also be important. I think a bit more context. During March and April, that was the time when the State Bank of Vietnam actually reduced the interest rate of the country. We were lucky that when we offered the saving product, we actually went into agreement with banks and fund managers to lock in into pre-pandemic interest rate. With that particular product, we can offer a higher yield to our clients, and it helped to have really sort of a strong unique selling point to the end users.
Yeah, thanks, Hui. It sounds like for all these stories shared so far, it's really a combination of these external market tailwinds plus acting on those opportunities that came up over the past year. So I think now the logical question is, what happens now in 2021? How do you guys approach sustaining this growth that you've achieved and then building on top of it? So let's mix things up. Maybe Theo, you can start first.
Yeah, for sure. So I think one big thing on our first year of going live, it's really trying to find PMF. So that's a key cycle of any startup. We got quite lucky and really having the whole core piece embedded early on when we developed the whole app experience. So this is the first piece. And next thing is how to actually scale and sustain this growth, right? So a key thing for us within the space of mental health, and it's one thing where we always focus on how do we activate and retain the users much better, because that's one of the biggest challenge for any app, and definitely more so one of the biggest things that mental health apps need to tackle as well. So for us this year itself, we've crossed, as you shared earlier, 1 million installs and users over the first 6 months. We're now at about 2 million users. So it's really exciting. Also, one key thing is how do you constantly grow and innovate? We're adding different pieces that really doesn't just serve as a self-guided tool, but how do we actually build the end-to-end mental health care system in Asia, where it's quite underserved? We've got a lot of great tools and platforms that do mindfulness apps, chatbots, and things like that. But I think what's really missing in the space is quality access to life, strong support, something that people can kind of get at the right time. So for us this year, it's really building on the product experience that people really like and love, and making sure we can find that core fit as we grow and scale as well.
Thanks, Theo. Hui, how about you?
For us in 2021 would be slightly different to 2020. So 2020, we see the growth in the tractions. But then during that time, we did went into the trouble that our operation did not scale accordingly. So we believe that to grow not just the number of users, but also grow in our culture and values are also important to create sort of a sustainable growth over the long term. That's the reason why in 2021, as part of the operation, we want to nurture the culture in the company so that when we grow in number of team members, we are all on the same page and we all on the same customer and client centric. So in April, when we see that growth skyrocket, literally everyone in the company became the CS. And during that time, we didn't have enough tools to serve clients. We didn't have enough admin panel and accessibility to all team members to actually solve the case for the clients. And it turned out to be, even though we had 100,000 came into the app, but then we lose easily 20,000 to 30,000 simply because we couldn't serve them on time. And that's it, create a strategy for 21. Now, like, we grow in sort of a number of users, but we need to grow sustainably internally as well by nurturing culture and values.
Yeah, Theo mentioned continuous innovation in product discovery, expanding their lineup of services as well. And then we talked about culture and really focusing on how internal operations are being done to handle the growth. So now, Giacomo, how are you approaching 2021 with LifePal?
Yeah, I think when it's a matter of growth, I agree what was being said. I think it was Theodoric that he said that really focus on product market fit first. And I know a lot of founders have really this urgency of scaling from day zero, but you need to really understand, are you building something people really want and is your product the right one? So you need to be a little bit of patient there. For us, the thinking was really about, because you get really stressed as a founder, like, do I have product market fit and do I have it like 10%, or I have it 20%, or do I have it like in full? Reality is you never have in full, but you're getting closer enough to that. For us, the thinking was more of, are we inventing something significantly new in the market? Or maybe are we selling something that is already existing in the market and we are just doing it much better? So we kind of got confused at the beginning. In our case, in insurance, we were trying to really reinvent the entire insurance. But we just realized actually the market is already big and it's growing. So we just need to do it much better and serve consumers better. So that understanding, I think, took us a while. And I think now we get the clarity. And then another point is for us, what is the operational framework that we use inside the company to generate the growth? Like, what's the type of execution that we want to have? And I like to say that there is always a baseline, and there's a sentence I like referring to, that the record of today is the baseline of tomorrow. So how do we really build something solid that then is sustainable, that we can kind of rely on and be relaxed that what we achieve is not going away? And to build a good baseline, we should never abuse voucher, subsidy, or maybe don't rely on the last minute partnership to hit the target. But let's really think about what is something solid that we can rely on. It is self-sustaining. And then there is this incremental part that is not obvious for everyone, especially people that come maybe from corporate, that every single month you need to do something fundamentally new. And that is not something you did the month before. And this is, I think, from people in corporate or consulting or banking is not straightforward, because you kind of try to polish the processes and be smart about it. What I think in our stage of a startup, we really need to reinvent ourselves every month and look for something that fundamentally moves the needle. And getting the clarity on which are the few actions that really move the needle and remove ourselves from the noise is actually really important. This noise, we call it fake work. And I think a lot of founder or manager try to escape and go to fake work because it's more fun, because it's actually more easy. And they try to go away from what is the real challenge that is hard. So for us, when we look for incremental action, is are we every month fundamentally introducing new strong action? And are we protecting ourselves as to stay away from fake work? And that's an exercise that I'm personally trying to do with the team. And I would like the team to be more educated about this. And we are getting better in there, but I can see it was not straightforward for everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Giacomo. You said a lot of great things there. You know, the record, you know, the record of the day is the baseline of tomorrow, for example. And you also made a great point about fake work. So you mentioned about trying to adjust yourself as a leader to continually adjust to the growth and then to change the company as well. So I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into that. So how has your leadership approach changed as a result of the growth that you experienced? Did you have to change the way that you sort of manage your employees, your teams, or even in terms of hiring new employees, or it sort of influenced LifePal's decision not to hire as much over the past year? So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, on hiring, we always try to say, don't throw people to problems. Try to throw technology and automation. Of course, at one point, you need to hire people, especially when it's more professional leaders or managers, but always try to automate. Well, like COVID and kind of how it affected us. I think for us, it's not be easy to keep the team motivated and to keep that extreme discipline in the processes and a kind of obsession for the metrics. I think we kind of lost it at the beginning with COVID, especially on more junior and new joiners. And I don't think it's easy, and maybe other people solve it, but for us, it was a challenge. As a leader, we need to communicate more often. And communication for a leader is never enough. You can say things 100 times and someone doesn't know it. But during COVID, you don't meet them face to face. It's really more important to have a simple and strong communication. And there are things we do. We actually have the people coming to office 50% of the time. I still don't think it's enough, but it's definitely much better than like once a week or even not even coming. So better communication, I would say, and see your people really to motivate them face to face. At the end of the day, we are human. So the emotional part, actually, especially when the startup is really hard, the emotional part is really important.
Yeah, thanks, Giacomo. Hui or Theo, do you relate to what Giacomo said about having this emotional connection and motivating your employees? Hui, yeah, go ahead.
I can totally agree on this. You know, this is part of the culture building that we are implementing at FinHai. For example, 2 years ago, we had only 11 to 14 team members. It was really a small team, and everyone can be easygoing together. But now we have 52 people, and communication has been much, much tougher for us, especially for me to other team members from different teams. I normally work in the product team and also the financial team, but then to talk to everyone in the company in a day is really, really hard. And communication across team are getting much, much harder. And so for me as a team leader, building a new skill set is really important and be more organized. I'm not sure about the other entrepreneurs, but about myself, you know, used to be really not organized, but now I have to get into shape and to be more organized and be more disciplined in working with others. So I think I can totally relate to Giacomo's story and also agree on the point that, you know, improving the skill set and leadership has changed when our company grows.
Yeah, thanks, Hui. How about you, Theo? Do you relate to anything that Hui or Giacomo said?
Yeah, for sure. So I think both things 100%. I can relate. I'll add a different spin where probably a bit more of as a young founder in my own journey here. I think one thing when we were getting started, small team, it's always easy to have like peers where you can get your hands into every single thing from the product to the business model. I think one key thing that I had to learn as well as we grew in scale, team right now is definitely not as big as Hui's team, but we have grown about double to triple that the team size, about 15 people. So I think one key thing is, how do I learn as a leader to start delegating and trusting my folks around me? I think that's a big part of being able to get to the next stage. I think that's always a tough trend for any young founder to kind of be able to let go and trust that people you hire can do your job as well, if not better than you. So I think the first thing is, how can I trust and delegate? From there, I really focus on the bigger picture stuff, right? Taking a step back, the day-to-day work. And I think next piece on hiring as well. So one thing that's been quite intentional for us and a big learning curve is how we hire as well. So we are a mentor of company. So I think having good work culture is something that I try to embed within what we do. But always, we try to make sure to spot and avoid such things where we've passed on really, really A people. But we know because they can't collaborate as well, that's something that we see as a red flag. We always like to welcome people that can collaborate well, are smart, are eager to learn, may not always be the most experienced within the field, but eager to get your hands dirty. That's kind of how we've been doing it. So I think there's two things. As a founder, how do I learn to let go and take a step back and focus on the bigger picture ideas? Of course, at this stage, we have to get hands dirty, but I think just trusting the leads that you bring on. And the second thing is just hiring quite intentionally as well. It's a big factor that I try to do myself.
Yeah, I really like what you said, Theo, about not picking A talent, but also finding people who can work collaboratively, people who fit the culture and who can really work towards the mission that you've set. I think we've often mentioned, you know, that you should always hire A talent, but there has to be some nuance there, I'd say. So I'd just like to go back to what you guys talked earlier in terms of approaching 2021. I was in a room earlier today with Ben Horowitz from A16Z, and he was talking about how a lot of founders really focus on the first product market fit, which I think all three of you guys have achieved remarkably. But then the challenge really comes in when you have to get to that second PMF, that third PMF, where you have to come up with new products and new features. And some of you guys already touched on it, but I just also wanted to ask, what are the challenges that you foresee in terms of the market and the industry that you guys are in as you approach creating new products and trying to hit new PMFs in the future? So maybe, Hui, yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So I think I can start out with my case and story first. We are on the track to find the third PMF. And I think it's getting harder and harder compared to the first and the second ones. For example, for the first one, we can fail and there's no problem at all. But at the scale that we are in right now, if we fail our third PMF, then it's really hard to get back on the feet because we're going to lose momentum, and not to mention that branding will be damaged. For example, we are working on a digital bank solution. And typically, if, let's say, this is our first PMF, then it may take us 3 months to launch the product, and we are okay if there's still bugs. But now it's really hard for us to have trouble because, you know, we're dealing with finance and we try to minimize all the bugs and all the mistakes that we don't want to deal with. Then it costs us more time to actually launch the product. So it means we have to be more careful. So I think that's one of the most difficult part when trying to find the product market fit for 2021. I think another difficulty that would be how we position our product with our clients. So for now, we are a micro investment platform, and we started to offer a digital bank feature. And how do we communicate that story and message to our clients would be the challenge for us at the moment. And we're still thinking on how. So I think that's a bit of the difficulties that we're actually experiencing in 2021 for FinHai in finding the new product market fit.
Yeah, how about you, Giacomo? Do you agree with what Hui said, that as you produce more features and services, the finding that PMF just becomes more and more difficult to find and hit correctly?
Yeah, you can see it with having multiple product market fit. The way I see it is like you get a baseline that is probably your core product market fit. And then how do you keep growing incrementally on the same line of business or in the same maybe category? So that's how I approach it. So business as usual plus incremental action that we need to do. So as I was saying before, the challenge for us is how do we create that mindset that every month we need to do something new. I like to say to the company that a startup is like a video game, that every time you go to the next level is much harder and you need to do something new. You need to train yourself. You need to spend hours to train yourself in order to finish the level and to go to the next level. We have a baseline of the first product market fit, and then how do we keep innovating and growing there? So kind of that duality, the business usual plus incremental is kind of a challenge. And maybe this brings me like to a challenge that we are facing now that we are starting to grow, where we are hiring more people, top line is growing, and everything is getting bigger. The challenge that we are facing is like, how do we create a culture of growth in the company that is embraced and accepted by everyone? I realize that's not straightforward because it's not human to grow 30, 40% every month. This is what a company do per year. So not everyone is used to that. So how do we create a culture of growth in the company where growing 30, 40% or maybe 20% a month is actually normal, and that people accept that we need to always look for new ideas, new structurally, new initiative? This is something we are working on. And I realize that now that we are growing and building a management team and a leadership team, it's something I need to spend time on, really building this culture of growth. And I'm quite interested to know also how the other guys think. Maybe deserve another session in Clubhouse, building this culture of growth, this obsession for growth.
Yeah, how about you, Theo? I mean, your company is a bit younger than Hui's or Giacomo's, but are you also finding yourself facing similar challenges or having the same questions?
Yeah, so I think for us, it really starts from the core mission. So what we want to do from day one, and it will stay for the years to come, is that we want to make mental health care a lot more accessible, easy to get, affordable for everyone. So for us, the medium is secondary. It starts with this core goal, how do you help people who need support get access to care? And I think that's quite similar to whether it's Hui's company or Giacomo's company. So I think that's the main thing. We started off, and like you mentioned, Apollo, we are definitely much more younger in life cycle. So we got our first PMF. We are now doing our second new feature. We started with a self-guided app. We now have telehealth involved as well. So it's this whole core piece of how do we get the right stickiness and aha moments. So for us, the big challenge, it's twofold. Finding the product market fit for the product itself, and the other thing is how do we actually shift the narrative for mental health in the region as well, because that's just one other piece that we have to spend a good amount of time educating, that mental well-being is for everyone. The core part of it's really getting the right messaging to the audience that we want to reach to as well. It's important because I think sometimes some founders or entrepreneurs who are new do think that once you get the first PMF, you're kind of done. I think that's really not true. So a story from one of our product advisors, he used to be one of the senior guys at Skype a couple of years back when they're still doing pretty well, and they foresaw this coming. They foresaw more frequent mediums like Snapchat picking up. But in their own metrics, so they were indexing for hours spent. So what they found was that people actually really like using Skype for calling your family, your grandmothers, and they spend really long session duration. So on that metric, looked really good. But what they're missing out on is that they weren't having frequent engagement. So this whole thing of how do you stack up against the current innovations coming into the space, like Snapchat, now Clubhouse, any other new tools that are coming in, constantly need to innovate. If not, you kind of just die out, right? Kind of where Skype today is. They're still doing fairly well, I agree, so, but not the top of the town. So it's one piece that we quite cognizant of, that we need to constantly iterate on what we do. That's that we're not indexing the wrong metrics and being quite clear the landscape that we're not just analyzing competition, but making sure that we can stack up to what the current needs of the markets are as well.
Wow, yeah. So the guy from Skype that you just talked about, he works for Intellect right now, right?
He's our product advisor. He's currently a professor.
Whoa, okay. That's pretty cool. I think we hear a lot of stories about sort of the number one, the winners, but it's always really interesting to hear the perspective of those who didn't quite make it. Continue listening to the rest of this Clubhouse session in the next episode. Until your next call, I am Paolo Aquino, and this has been On Call with Insignia Ventures.